Podcast, episode number 35.
Yeah.
I am your host, co-host, Jordan Raub.
I'm your co-host, Dan Mecca.
And we are back for a big weekend, Tron Legacy.
Yeah. And don't say we weren't working while we were gone.
That's true. Yeah, no, we were going to do a podcast, but it was just the tours last week. I mean, who wants to talk all about
the tours?
So we thought we'd just mention the tours briefly, move on to Tron Legacy, move on to The Fighter.
Yeah, which also a lot of movies.
Got a wide release. Yeah. And How Do You Know? Which also got a wide release.
Anyway.
So, yeah, I mean, no news stories. Let's just get right into
it. Yeah, just jump into stuff. Let's do it.
So, first Taurus that came out last
little
weekend.
Mention, yeah.
No one saw it. this is the American English language debut from Florian Henkel Donnersmarck.
Yeah.
And he won the Oscar in 2006 for The Lives of Others, one of my favorite movies of that year. And he kind of, he was wondering what project he was going to do next, and he decided on this massive budget, kind of, I think it was a spy caper, I would say, but not really.
Yeah, well, it's based on a French film called Anthony Zimmer, and, I guess, I don't really know what you'd call it. I mean, it was...
It's definitely not a comedy or a musical, as the Golden Globes like to put it.
No. I mean, it's a comedy. It's a caper comedy.
Did you see, though, that they interviewed Angelina Jolie, and she laughed. She thought it was hilarious that they thought it was a comedy. So even she doesn't think it's a...
Really?
Yeah. But anyways, yeah. So it's, you know, it's kind of like a...
I don't even know. It's weird. Like, what do you even say about this movie? Like, it's just such... I mean, it's really just a miscalculation, you know? And it's one of these things where, had it not starred Angelina... Johnny Depp, had it not been directed by Von Donnersmarck, had it not been written by Julian Fellowes, who gave us Gosford Park, which is like one of the best, you know, screenplays of the last 10 years, and for my money, and also written by Christopher McQuarrie, who gave us The Usual Suspects, had all that not been together, you know, had that package not been, you know, in front of us, I really don't think that that people would be... I mean, I don't think 21% would be what we were seeing.
Yeah. It is funny, the critic response, you know, because, I mean, we're going to talk about a movie later, How Do You Know, which has like 38, 40%. And right. This movie, I think, is far more watchable.
Right, I mean, How Do You Know, you know, has that much
kind of
and the same Star Wars. Yeah, so that's a good point.
Same big budget.
I mean, I think, I don't know, I think people were expecting, you know, I think people really wanted, you know, Charade here. And, I mean, in a lot of ways, that's kind of what... I guess Von Donnersmarck is trying to get to. But there's just so many things that are wrong with this movie. Like, people are operating on different levels. You know, like, you have Angelina Jolie playing kind of, you know, kind of this Grace Kelly character, but really not really, because she's, like, very empowered. So, I mean, a big part of this movie is, like, they want to try to switch it and have Angelina kind of be like the Cary Grant, and then Johnny Depp kind of be like the Audrey Hepburn kind of a thing, and like it kind of works, but then you feel like Johnny Depp maybe doesn't want to go the full way, and like he has got this, you know, scenes of toughness, and then there's this twist at the end, and you know, Angelina's doing her thing, and she's got the ridiculous accent, she, you know, her lips are, you know, 1,000 miles wide, and you know, 2,000 miles long, and you know, all that, and it works kind of, but like. The direction's too slow. There's this chase scene involving boats in Venice that just, like, the boats go too slow. So, it the scene takes 5 minutes, and it's not that suspenseful because no one's going fast. It's almost like a spoof, kind of like the Austin Powers spoof.
Yeah.
It's, like, very strange.
Well, the whole time I was watching this movie, I kind of thought they were kind of spoofing on somewhat of that genre. Like, there's a scene where, like these FBI, not FBI, what the whatever
Interpol,
the word,
I
Interpol,
believe is what, like Paul, like, Bettany, right?
Yeah, and like
Paul Bettany works for Scotland Yard,
right?
And then there's like Interpol people too,
yeah.
like
there's a scene where
Angelina
like
Jolie,
a guy's like working on like this face recognition software, and a guy from like beneath him comes up and tries to like look at it, and like I've never seen a scene like that where like, oh, you can't look at this, you don't have this clearance. Like it's kind of like, I thought it was kind of funny,
right? And then that guy turns out to be like a mole,
yeah.
And I remember just being like that's the way that happens.
Yeah, like throughout the movie, you're not sure if they're trying to make fun of it or they're just embracing it.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Like,
and
yeah.
Like, excuse me. The thing about this movie we're gonna talk about this later. We mentioned this when we saw How Do You Know. Was it's the kind of movie that you keep waiting to start, and then at some point you're waiting for it to end.
Yeah, there's
like there's never a moment where like, oh, we're in it, like we're in this shit right now.
Yeah.
Like this is like, you know, like the first act's done, I'm aware of the conflict, and like, okay, and then like once that's done, you're like, oh, okay, let's wrap it up. The movie's not like that. You kind of keep waiting for it to, I don't know, not get good. You know what I mean? Like I did enjoy. There are sequences I enjoyed, and like, you know, like I said, I said to you after we saw the screening, the first 30 minutes for my money were very solid, and everybody seemed to kind of be on the same page. It was very light, and there were some funny moments, and Paul Bettany had a couple nice little, like, you know, quippy, you know, assholey lines, and then like the meet cute, if you want to call it that, between Angelina Jolie and Johnny Depp on the train was really nice. It was pretty well written. Yep. I was like, oh, all right, like here we go, and then we really never went, never really went anywhere, and then, you know, things started to get less funny and more serious, and then the ending happened, and it just. I don't know. It's just a smorgasbord, kind of.
I mean, it is. They did shoot it on location in Venice, so that is a plus.
Right. I mean, locales are beautiful.
But it's kind of one of those things where no matter what you kind of do, there wasn't any. He didn't bring anything that new to the table. It was like very, you know.
Yeah. I mean, in every way, I would a movie that I really couldn't stop thinking about while watching this film was Ocean's 12. Just, you know, from everything, literally everything. And, you know, the biggest thing being the locales. Like, the biggest thing being, you know, a big problem a lot of people had with Ocean's 12 when that movie came out was the fact that it was just a bunch of movie stars in really beautiful places kind of doing something that really didn't matter. And I feel like this movie kind of is like that. And, you know,
So there's some really funny parts, I think. While we were walking on the movie, talked about this, a few of Johnny Depp's, because, you know, Johnny Depp's is kind of a good confused state for most of the movie, right. So some humor is derived from that, I would say.
I mean, he's got this running thing. Well, no, I mean, he's got this running Spanish. Joke where he's speaking Spanish to the Italians,
yeah.
And that's funny, like, the first three times, but then it kind of wears out his welcome, and you feel like they're really trying to milk it, and I don't know, I just, like, I guess I don't understand, you know, and this is where you just think about the business and stuff, like, I guess I don't understand what McQuarrie and Julian Fellowes. And then also there was a rewrite by Jeffrey Nachmoff, who wrote and directed Traitor, which, I mean, was kind of an underrated film. I think he's uncredited if you're looking. Yeah. And so, you know, and also Von Donnersmarck had a credit on it too. So you have all these talented people. I mean, the writing is, I guess, is the writing the worst part? I guess, what would you say?
I mean, in terms of...
There's no worst part.
No, it's... No.
Like, that's what's weird about the movie. Like, it's not...
It kind of rides along.
You know, Von Donnersmarck, you know, as a director with a clear eye for the frame, some of it works, and some of it feels like it belongs in another movie.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's one dance sequence at the end that's beautiful, and, like, that's, like, you know, that's a scene where, like, this is this movie. Like, this is what I've been waiting for. Like, I want this crazy dance sequence where it's, like, really, like, wild. And there's Paul Bettany running around the banister or, you know, running around the top of the thing looking for this guy. And, you know, it's funny and it's wild and all this. And, like, that's kind of what I was promised in the beginning with the... And then there's other scenes where it's, like, ominous and, like, you know, you have these, like, obstructed frames. And it's... I don't know. Yeah. I really don't know what was happening.
And I think it's always kind of leading up to... whatever the twist, you know, because you're always trying to figure out what Johnny Depp is actually doing, and it's, and we won't reveal it, but it's kind of what you suspect going in, and it kind of, not, I mean, it's cheap, I would say, but it's not even, like, confusing, it's just kind of, like, not a cop-out,
and, like,
I guess,
I would say it is kind of a cop, well, I mean, you know, I don't want to say that, but it's cheap, and I would say, a lot of the plotting is very cheap, like, a lot of... The way they get away with a lot of what happens in the movie hinges on the fact that Paul Bettany is the worst Scotland Yard detective since Eddie Marzahn from Sherlock Holmes. Like, you know what I mean? Like, literally just the most inept, incapable guy. Like, and, you know, so when you hinge plot turns on someone's ineptitude, it's kind of... It's hard not to look past it. Like, people always say about Chinatown, right? Considered one of the greatest screenplays ever written. If you actually look at that movie, Jake Giddies is actually a pretty horrible detective, right? He should have known the mystery, you know, kind of a thing. Like, if he really was a good detective. But the thing about that movie is it doesn't really hinge on that. You know what I mean? Like, the movie moves along at this pace that, yes, in a way, I guess because it's through his eyes, it does hinge on that. But it moves, and because we're only in his mind, we never think about that. But Paul Bettany's the side character who you don't know anything about. And so when you're making him this stupid character and the plot's turning in these ridiculous ways because he's just incoherent, you know, you just kind of want to be like, well, what? Like, what? You know, how is this? You know, like, and so I just feel like that there's a lot of things, like, a lot of things that just make this effort just kind of wasted. You know, it was just a shame, you know, because you get all these people together, and it's just like, yeah.
Speaking of...
I didn't realize how similar our reviews are going
to
be, actually.
Let's lead up to Tron Legacy, I guess, yeah, right? We'll do How Do You Know first, because that kind of is
very similar,
another,
yeah.
I mean, what I think it cost around the Taurus budget as well. I mean, this cost $120.
Taurus, it says $100 million on, okay, Box Office
this
Mojo,
is,
and
this
then
is even higher.
Here it says $120,
yeah.
Unbelievably, yeah.
Yeah, so this is the next film from after Spanglish from James L. Brooks.
Yeah, I think only his sixth film, I believe.
Yeah. And, I mean, a comedy drama that I think it was shot actually a while ago. At least, I think 2008, maybe?
Well, there's been a lot. Like, he reshot things, which didn't work.
Yeah.
Clearly. But no, I mean, this is a... just a fucking misfire.
I'm massive.
Like, I don't even know how to fully... Like, I am a huge James L. Brooks fan. Yeah. Like, you know, I'll defend my man to the grave. I mean, he's one of the creators of The Simpsons.
Yeah.
He wrote The Simpsons movie, which is a solid movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
as good as it gets, one of our faves.
As good as it gets is honestly, like, one of my favorite movies, and also, like, one of my comfort food movies, you know what I mean? Like, I watch a movie every day and make me feel better. And then Broadcast News is just like, you know, you don't get a better movie. Like, you don't get a better movie than that when it comes to writing. You just don't get a better movie than that. Like, that movie's funny. It's wholesome. It's got, like, these insanely well-rounded characters and, like, these very real relationships. And, like, just gets better every time I watch it. It's amazing. In terms of Endearment, I'm actually not as much of a fan of. But, like, that's a movie along the same lines where... You know, it kind of actually somewhat like The Fighter, which we'll get into. It really shows like the really just fucking like struggles of family and like the give and the take and the leechy way, you know, that a family can be and stuff like this. And even Spanglish is underrated, you know, like an incredible Adam Sandler performance and amongst many miscalculations, but like an incredible Adam Sandler performance and a couple of really great scenes. This like doesn't have a great scene, like none of the characters are that interesting.
So,
like the funniest person and the most honest person is Owen Wilson, which I'm gonna tell you something, I did not see coming from a mile away. I remember when I saw the trailer for this movie and I saw the cast, I was like, wow, it's gonna be interesting seeing Owen Wilson work with all of these A-listers.
Yeah.
And then you walk out of the movie, you're like, wow, Owen Wilson was the only one who saved face. Like, how the hell did that happen? Jack Nicholson's barely in it, and I kept waiting for him to die.
Yeah,
like,
he
not
bad.
In the film, but like in real life.
In real life, on set.
Like he looks overweight, but not in like an I eat too many doodles way. Like in a I have a serious problem way. Like I have water weight, someone take me to a hospital. Reese Witherspoon has never looked better, but she's never been worse. It's not her fault. Is it her fault? It's like one of the poorest written characters I've ever come
everything
across.
Everything about this movie, we'll talk about Tron Legacy later, which I was a little disconnected from, but this, like, every second of this movie, I wanted to just punch the screen.
Well, it's like one of those movies where I don't fully, and we talked about this for literally like an hour after, we had to go to a diner and like fully comprehend
decompress.
Like eat horrible food and like eat, and like it was inappropriate eating horrible food, talking about a horrible movie. But, like, Paul Rudd is, like, playing Woody Allen. You know, he's, like, got these ridiculous neuroses that just don't even fully make sense. And you're just, like, he's supposed to be the co-head or, like, you know, the second in command of this financial company or something. And like, there's no way in a million years that this guy would ever be able to handle, like, 2 minutes of the kind of stress you get in that
world.
And
they talk about, like, the, you know, this using he's getting indicted. And, like, go in-depth. They never talk about
anything.
But they never, like, it didn't feel like a James L. Brooks movie. It felt like,
words. It was just such, like, you want to talk about a misfire. Like, that's what you're talking about. Like, this just, like, a miss nuke bomb. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, I don't even, like, the thing about As Good As It Gets, people give his movies a lot of crap, right? Because they say, you know, they play on, you know, they're kind of episodic and whatever, you know.
I'm going to look up the official synopsis just to see what this movie was about. Like, just to literally see what they were trying to go for.
Well, it's just going to be, no, all it's going to tell you is it's going to be the taglines where it's like, he's in trouble, she's in limbo.
I hope there's more than that. But, like, I came out of this movie just asking myself what James L. Brooks was trying to say or even trying to entertain us with. Because it's not...
Well, I don't know, like, okay, so, As Good As It Gets.
Oh, my God, there's not even a synopsis. It just says, how do you know it's a comedy? It just says what it is.
Is it a comedy?
Here we go.
I'll say this.
Feeling a bit past her prime at 27, former athlete
She's 31,
Lisa Jorgensen finds herself in the middle of a love triangle as
she's
a
She's 31 in the movie.
Okay, well, that's
way to go, IMDb.
As a corporate guy in crisis competes with Lisa's current baseball playing.
Bo.
So I guess it's a love triangle. So let's talk about that aspect for a little, because that does not work out. There's not a second of this movie where I thought Reese Witherspoon was a desirable character.
Right, that's the biggest problem.
Yeah,
like the biggest problem in the movie is that it's kind of ironic because you know, in all of James L. Brooks' movie, like in Broadcast News, right, a big part of that movie is the fact that High Hunters is a very smart person, right?
Yeah.
She's really into the news, journalism, integrity, right, all that stuff. And Albert Brooks is this very smart guy. He's very nerdy, into the news, integrity. And they should be together, right? But High Hunter falls in love with William Hurt, who's like this very aloof, extremely good-looking, extremely charming man. And like, she falls in love with William Hurt instead of Albert Brooks, like, to spite herself. And the whole idea is like, you know, this guy is inept, like, in terms of what she's looking for, you know, like, he's not intelligent enough, but, like, even despite that, she's in love with this guy. And I guess it's kind of the same thing in this movie, because all Reese Witherspoon is pretty. Like, she's not a nice person to, like, these people. Like, she's very cold, very, very cold. Like, she talks in Chinese cookie fable things, which I, like literally, she says things that I don't even, like, know. Like, which she says to Paul Rudd at one point. And that's another thing, like, she says these stupid things to Paul Rudd, and then Paul Rudd gets, like, really excited, and you don't know, it's like, is he just trying to impress her? Or is he just actually, is he mentally retarded, maybe? Like, or, you know, maybe, like, you know, maybe Jack Nicholson took too many drugs when he was younger, and that's why he's sick, and his son's retarded.
Well, that makes sense now.
I guess, so it's a movie about drugs.
Yeah.
No, but so, like, she says this thing to Paul Rudd. First of all,
I'm surprised you remember any of this movie.
Oh, dude, it's so bad. Paul Rudd and Reese Witherspoon are hanging out, and Paul Rudd just goes like this. He's like, hey, do you want to try a drink that I make? And you're just like, the audience, you're like, like, just like she is, you're like, oh, yeah, okay, like, whatever, weird guy who's been in this movie for way too long. And he goes and he's like, they show him make this ridiculous, like, Bloody Mary-ish drink or some bullshit, and then he gives it to her, she's like, oh, that's good. And then, like, at some one point in the scene, she says, well, it's like my dad says, don't drink to feel better, only drink to feel more better. And you're like, or only drink to feel even better. And he's like, oh, that, I love that. And you're like, you love that ridiculous saying that's meant to be a joke, right? James L. Brooks, like, isn't that meant to be like, a joke about drinking, like, too much, because I don't even know. And so, the movie is full of moments exactly like that, where two characters interact in a way that doesn't match with the way that you think that they should interact in the world that we exist in. And so I spent a lot of the time kind of thinking about what world these characters exist in.
Oh, I spent a lot of time thinking about other things, too, while I was watching this.
Well, no, I mean, and so then you have Owen Wilson, yeah, who is kind of a savior in this movie because he's playing kind of himself. He's a very, like, fun-loving
it's
baseball
weird, though,
player.
The way they, like, because, like, the first 30 minutes of this movie, 20 minutes, is just about her and about her, you know, coming up, a huge baseball star, not making the
team.
Right,
playing for the USA team. Like, she's 31, and then they cut her because she's too old. Blah,
yeah,
blah.
And, like, Owen Wilson just comes in the movie, like I don't even... He comes in, like...
Well, I guess she's, like, kind of dating him. Like, they're kind of, like, hooking up at this point.
But then he becomes, like, a major character in the end, and you're kind of... Like, it's just
well,
because,
like, he falls in love with her, but he has this whole different mindset about women, but he's a very nice guy. And it's just, I don't, like, there's a lot of things about the movie that just don't make sense. Like, and the biggest thing being, why do these two guys love Reese Witherspoon so much? Really, I mean, truthfully, why do they love Reese Witherspoon so much? And there's just, like, a bunch of things. Like, for example, we were talking about this. There's a scene where first of all, let's just talk about how unbelievably atrocious the editing is in this movie. The editing in this film is, like... You want to talk about continuity? You thought that Shutter Island was bad, that was intentional, I guess.
Yeah,
but, like, you think that, like, Scorsese movies are bad, right? Because they are, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of continuity mistakes and everything in every Scorsese movie, but... But, like, the thing is, when you make a bad movie and there are bad technical things in it, I mean, it's compounded. You know what I mean? So, like, I'm not enjoying How Do You Know, right? I'm not enjoying the movie. I see discontinuity, right?
I literally
and
said
then all
that.
Of a sudden, like, the whole movie becomes all of the fucked up edits. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the Scorsese shot, movie, yeah. you are entertained, so you don't even think about it.
And there were shot choices in the movie where I literally, if you were next to me, we were sitting, you would have heard me say, no, like, no, they're not actually doing this. Like I was shocked.
Like, so strange. Yeah. Like, just, like, there's a, and you mentioned this to me.
Just some examples, yeah.
Yeah, there's a shot where it's on Paul Rudd at a dinner table, and the camera, like,
it literally felt like the camera guy fell asleep.
Well, no, because his face is right on the edge of the frame, which would be, like, you know, an interesting, like, let's break the rule of thirds kind of and, like, really extend.
If it was the American, like, extend the
out, like, you're right, extend the outer frame kind of thing. And then the camera, like, it doesn't, like, track or shift or anything. Or pan, or it just kind of like it trickles, like it kind of goes like it goes like,
and it's not like the next shot means something in that sequence.
And the best part about it is Paul. It's almost like Paul Rudd almost like knows, because you see his head, like, he goes out of the thing, and you see Paul Rudd. Like,
you can tell
his head, like his head, like catches the edge of the frame, like he's trying to stay.
Jason was like, "Oh shit, get back in frame.
We have no more money. This is our last reshoot.
We spent $70 million on you guys. We have no money."
He's like, Jack's getting $20 million to go to the Laker game tonight, and he's clearly not taking his meds. Like, let's talk about that for a second. Jack Nicholson, you want to talk? There's no way that Robert De Niro in Little Fockers is going for more of a paycheck than Jack Nicholson. Like, they were literally scenes.
Well, Robert De Niro actually probably worked, like, had to go on set.
There were,
like,
literally scenes where it looked like Jack Nicholson forgot his line in the middle of his line. Like, and he would do his little, like, facial tics, and you'd be like, bro, you're not as good as it gets. Like, that was 13 years ago, my man. Like, just let it go. Like, do you think about the lines that were in As Good As It Gets? Like, classic lines.
I know.
Like, classic lines. Like, lines that I'll never forget. Like,
what
lines
Sony should do is they should just re-release. Like,
they should redub all the dialogue from As Good As It Gets and just put it over the mask.
For the next few weekends, just to kind of get somewhat of an audience, just put As Good As It Gets, re-release as How Do You Know.
As How Do You Know. Like, just do, and people
don't
people
tell
won't
people.
Notice.
And people are like, people, wow, that was a great
movie. That was a great movie. I feel like I've seen it before, but I loved it. You're like, yeah, you have seen it before, and it's great.
Yeah.
There's so many lines in those movies. I mean, in terms of endearment, like, you know, there's amazing lines in that film. I mean, in all of his movies, like Spanglish, there's a couple of really nice doozies. Like,
and a few more technicals, but Hans Zimmer score. There was a few moments where I was like, oh, okay. And then
really?
The rest is forgettable.
Was there ever any?
There was like one scene where it was like a little special little flourish he added, like tiny, but that was it. And then. Now Janusz Kaminski did the cinematography.
Yeah, horrible.
It felt like they were shooting like a commercial, like for 2 hours.
But here's the thing, now correct me if I'm wrong.
Like a Target commercial or something.
That guy, what else?
Well, he did Funny People. It was like a big break, but he did Diving Bell and the Butterfly.
Right. So like, yeah, and then Funny People.
He did. I'm pretty sure he did Saving Private Ryan.
Right, and Funny People, and I'm pretty sure he did War of the Worlds.
Yeah. I mean, he's a big. He works with.
He's big about Spielberg. Right, and he's big about oversaturation and all that stuff. And
this is kind of like he shot Indiana Jones the same way as How Do You Know, like kind of that really bright, you know what I mean? Some the new Indiana Jones.
Yeah, but it works with Indiana Jones.
Oh, yeah, I know,
because it's serial and it's supposed to be kind of but like this is just a weird movie. Like everything about it just feels. It doesn't feel real.
No,
like, and I don't mean it in a way. Obviously, like
it's not like
we're saying the characters aren't real, but like it actually doesn't feel like a real thing that's happening. Like, when you're watching it, I don't know, there's something about it that's just so strange. Like, everything feels so, I don't even know how to, and I was forcing my laughs because I was really trying to like it, and like the first 20 minutes, I was like, okay, you know, like, this is, but like, Paul Rudd just was clearly kind of like, running blind, you know, like, he clearly just doesn't really know what he's doing. And they're just like, there's a scene at the end of this fucking movie, right? Okay, there's a scene. Let's just end with this, because this is
I
just.
I think I know what you're gonna say.
Like, this is just the movie right here, where there is Catherine Hahn is like this pregnant assistant.
Oh, see, there's even a worse scene after that. I know what you're talking about.
Assistant to Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
And she's pregnant, and like she's so pregnant that she's gonna have to have a baby. Like, that's how pregnant she is. And sure enough, at the end of the movie, she has the baby.
Surprise!
And there's this whole scene where the husband, who we've never met before, who's in Mad Men, I believe.
Well, Board of Death.
Or I'm sorry, Board of Death. Right, my bad, Board of Death. Comes in and like, has this whole speech, and then I guess it's supposed to be, like, Reese Witherspoon is realizing her faults through his speech or something, and it's, like, this really bumbling, horrible thing and everything, and Paul Rudd's recording it, and everything ends, and then the guy turns to Paul Rudd and is like, did you get it? And Paul Rudd's like, oh, no, I didn't get it, and they all literally, like, vehemently, like, freak out, I'm like, you're not gonna get it! And then, like, they redo the entire thing, like, in the film, yeah. In the theater. Again, like, not a good scene
and to cap it off
to begin with, well, and then they redo it, like, as if to remind us that, like, this was a poorly written scene, a poorly directed scene, very poorly, like, let's just quickly say, horribly directed movie, right? and poorly acted scene because it was horribly directed. Let's, like, do it again, just so that you know how bad this entire fucking monstrosity of a film is. Like, let's just remind you, like, and Owen Wilson wasn't in that scene, and that's the reason it was.
Well, even worse than that is there's a little joke that's kind of funny at the beginning where you know, she says, oh, the father of my son is coming, and Jack Nicholson enters. And you think, oh, for a few seconds, it's him. And that's funny. But then at the end of everything Dan just said, Paul Rudd goes up to, what's her name?
Yeah, Catherine
Hahn. And it's like, oh my gosh, I thought it was.
No, and Catherine Hahn's like, oh, you didn't think. And Paul's like, yeah. And they laugh about it. Like, they laugh about the one funny joke in the movie. You're like, are you fucking serious? Are you laughing at the one joke that you successfully made?
That happened 10 minutes ago, too. It's like,
James L. Brooks, like, I loved you. I loved you. I would have jumped in front of a metaphorical bus for you, and you just shit all over my face. Like, what was happening? I don't know. If I ever meet him, God, I really hope I do. He's a very talented man. Anyway, like Roger, and I've said this before, Roger Ebert says, only great filmmakers make truly horrible films. And I'm gonna tell you, James L. Brooks, he's got his one under the belt. He's got his 1941.
If you follow him on Twitter, Canyon Jim, he said on December 16th, he just wrote, ouch. So I think he either saw the reviews or something, or the box office. So I mean, it sucks. I don't feel bad for him because he made a fucking horrendous movie. But
Well, no, listen, here's the thing. It would seem, and this is, I'm just going to say this, it would seem that maybe the times have passed him by, kind of a thing.
True, that is true.
You know, like, just the way.
But there's
I say that, and As Good As It Gets, you know, holds up.
Timely. Yeah, right. I just watched it for the first time, like, last year, and I didn't seen it before. And
right, exactly. So, yeah. So I say that, and As Good As It Gets, I watched, like, 2 weeks ago. Yeah. I mean, and Broadcast News, I watched literally two nights ago. I mean, those movies still stand up, you know. Amidst, you know, journalism dying, Broadcast News still stands up. And so, I don't really know if that's true, but in this movie, it honestly feels like James L. Brooks is operating on a level that is literally not human. And I'm not trying to be hyperbolic, but I'm just saying, like, literally, it just feels like who is he speaking to it other than himself? Like, that's what I want to know. Yeah. I mean, like, who are these people? Like, how do they exist?
Yeah.
Like, how do we relate to these
people? I was talking to someone earlier today. It's not even like, you look at the trailer and you might think it's almost a bad romantic comedy in the likes of, like, The Ugly Truth or Killers. But it's not that it, like, embarrassingly bad jokes. It's just, like, there's such a massive disconnect going on through the entire film that you don't know what's really, you know what I mean?
Well, and the reason it's worse than those movies is because it's clearly trying to be so much more than those movies. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, look, I mean, Killers is bad because it's Killers and, you know, it's directed by Robert Luketic and it's like, you know, obviously it's going to be a bad movie. I mean, you know, it's like, no, but I mean, you know, it's a genre film with Ashton Kutcher and, you know, he's fine and Katherine Heigl and they're fine and charming, but, like, you know, if you don't give them perfect lines and you don't figure out a way to really make their kind of limited talents shine, and they can, you know, then you're gonna have a bad movie, and that's what happened. But, like, with this movie, you have these amazingly talented people, you know, not unlike The Tourist, and you're kind of just left wondering how no one just stopped one day and said, no, and, like, truthfully,
no.
Like, how no one just stopped one day and just said, James, what are we doing? You know what I mean? Like what are we doing? Yes, like, what are we actually doing? You know what I mean? Like, truthfully, like, I want you to tell me what we're doing. And you know, and I'm sure if they asked, James would have been like,
he goes, how do you know?
I can't really respond to that. That's perfect. That's a perfect end.
All right. How do we know? We don't know.
Right. I don't know.
All right. Let's move on. Yeah. Avoid how do we know? How do I know?
How do we know that you should avoid? How do you know? Yes. We saw how do you know.
That's
so
true.
Avoid how do you know.
And yeah, let's move on to a better film than that. The Fighter. David O. Russell. took over for Darren Aronofsky, I think, was originally.
A project long and waiting.
A Marky Mark passion project.
Marky Mark joint.
I think Matt Damon was going to play a Dickie, role.
Yeah. I mean, Matt Damon Brad was going to play Dickie. Brad Pitt was going to play Dickie.
And now we landed on Christian Bale.
A fine, fine choice.
Yes, and I mean, the four leads in this, I would say, Wahlberg, Bale, Adams, and Leo. Well, I mean, support. The three are supporting. But,
yeah, but the four main.
But four.
And also Jack McGee as Melissa Leo's husband. Yes. Very good.
And really solid casting all around, I have to say.
Very, very, very true.
A little, you know, the movie's just about Mickey Ward. Kind of. He's not really up and coming. Is he up and coming? He's like.
They say he's a stepping stone. Yeah. You know, he. I mean, he. I think he's like.
He's. It feels like he's around doing it for a while, 30, but this is kind of his emergence.
He's around 30, yeah. I think, yeah. When this movie takes place. Which I think it takes place like in 93.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
And so he's a stepping stone, which is to say, I mean, they kind of explain it in the movie. I mean, he's a guy. He's the guy you fight to fight the real guys. You know, so he's the guy you beat to fight the real guys, kind of a thing. So. That's how he feels, and obviously he wants a shot, and his manager is his mother, and his trainer is Dickie Eklund, who is his half-brother, and it's just this really, you know, it's, and the movie really isn't about boxing, and you can even kind of tell in the way that David Russell rushes through the boxing scenes, really it's not about boxing. Yeah. I mean, it's about Mickey Ward and his brother, who gets all the attention, like, you know, Melissa Leo loves Dickie to the high heavens, kind of a thing, even though he's a crack addict. But like, Dickie's whole claim to fame is that he knocked down Sugar Ray Leonard in 78, which really happened, obviously, because it's based on a true story. And, you know, he's called the Pride of Lowell, Massachusetts, outside of Boston. So, I mean, there's a lot going on, and it just kind of talks about, you know, it's like, you know, like I said before, with terms of endearment, it's an honest look at families and how they can really, you know, manipulate you and use you in the name of family, but also there's that love there, and Amy Adams plays Charlene. Mickey Ward's girlfriend, Charlene, who is just, you know, firecracker. And, yeah, I mean, I think I enjoyed this movie a little bit more than you did. It was an aggravating movie to watch, you know, because it's like watching a dysfunctional family. I mean, literally, is you're watching a dysfunctional family for 2 hours, and it's just aggravating because when you're looking as a third party, you know, objectively, you're kind of watching and you're like, oh, come on, like, just, you know, get the fuck out of there. You know what I mean? Like, just go live your life. Like, you can see your mother and you can see your brother on, you know, on the holidays, kind of a thing, you know. But the more you watch, really, the more you understand this very symbiotic relationship that they all have, and like this really just kind of torturous thing that they have going on, but also very essential thing. And so, you know, I love the way that David Russell, I love the way he places the camera. I mean, he does interesting things.
I would say, like, him coming in here, I don't think, if Darren directed this, it wouldn't really be the family drama.
Oh, Darren, yeah, Darren.
Darren Aronofsky.
Dude, Darren directed this. Yeah. I totally agree.
No, you know what I'm saying. And I really, that's, because, I mean, from the trailer, it kind of seems like just another Rocky movie.
Yeah, and it's not. I mean, I really don't think it is. I mean,
but by the end, I think it is, and that's where it kind of lost me.
Right.
We'll talk about, I guess, later.
I mean, yeah.
But I did love the first two-thirds. Like, I was into it the whole time.
Right. I mean, like, I don't know. There's things about this movie. Like I said, and you can read my review. I really think I articulated kind of how I feel in that review. I mean, I call it a bastard of a thing, because it's just like, it's kind of, the movie itself is kind of like the family, because it's just this really kind of ugly movie, you know, it's poorly paced, you know, there are, like, these beautiful shots, and then there's these, like, kind of really, like, strange shots, and
it makes a lot. I mean,
there's moments where you feel like he's exploiting these people, and then there's moments when you feel like he's being really honest about these people, David Russell, and at the end of the film, it's really imperfect, you know what I mean, and it ends up, you know, obviously, he has to win the fight, you know, because he did win the fight, and it has to be this underdog story. But, I don't know, it felt earned to me. Like, it really felt earned, you know. I really liked Mark Wahlberg. There was one or two scenes where the whining got a little bit much for me. But honestly, like, I think he anchors this whole movie, because you have Amy Adams, Melissa Leo, and Christian Bale just, like, yucking it up with the acting, like, so, so much. That, I mean, you need one person to be there kind of as the calm center, and apparently that's what Mickey Ward is in real life. And, like, I'm not going to start getting into, like, you know, real portrayals and all that stuff, because this is a film, after all, and it is a work of fiction, so, you know, it's how much I believe on the screen, not how much they're really like these people.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed Mark Wahlberg's performance. I think Christian Bale's getting a little bit too much hype for his role. I mean, he does a lot of acting. It's very, like, you know, very, it's, whoa, Christian Bale, look at what a good job he's doing, you know. And I mean, and he does do a great job, and you definitely learn to love the performance. But in the same way you, like, learn to love Tony, you know, Tony, what's his name? Tony Montana, from Scarface. Yeah. You know, I don't love that performance, but I do. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't love that performance. He didn't deserve an Oscar, but it's so ridiculous that at the end of it, you're like, eh. Like, that was insane, you know, like, you know, more theatrical than anything else. Amy Adams, I really think, honestly, though, of the four of them, Amy Adams is the one who I just think runs away with it. Just fucking just destroys every scene. She's so funny. And
even, yeah, her opening scene is great, too, at a bar.
Yeah.
And I think we should get into spoilers, because I do want to ask you something, but, I mean, first we'll say, I think this movie is actually quite hilarious throughout most of it.
Yeah, it's very funny.
Yeah, so if you're expecting kind of, like, by the numbers, boxing movie, I don't think you're going to get that.
I mean, it takes risks that Rocky never took. You know what I mean? You know, it takes... I mean, listen, it's no Raging Bull. I'm not going to say it's a Raging Bull. But it's a film that takes those kinds of chances, in my mind. I know, you know, people see different things, but the way they shoot the boxing is kind of interesting. They shoot it like, you know, old pay-per-view, you know, video, you know, the way it looked on the old TVs in, like, 93, because, you know, VHS, you know, kind of like VHS graininess kind of thing going on. And it works. I mean, it's a little, you know, disorienting, but also it's kind of original. And I actually like the way that they shot the boxing scene, you know, kind of very brutal and very close to the body. And
But I do agree, though. You said, like, he just kind of feels like he's trying to get it over with.
Right, and they, I mean, they shot, and I mean, and it, I mean, if it's any, you know, once again, you know, we're talking about the film the way we saw, but, I mean, they shot all the boxing scenes in 3 days.
Oh, wow. I didn't
know. So, I mean, that kind of, I mean, up for budget constraints, but also, I mean, you see it, and it looks like they shot in 3 days, you know, it really does look like that.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, it's definitely not Raging Bull.
Yeah, oh, no. Yeah, no, I mean, so that's the thing. I mean, it's, you know, it's really more of a family drama than anything else. But, yeah, I mean,
and then I think that element works great, and, I do want to get into spoilers, I guess.
Yeah,
I would say definitely see this movie, kind of a crowd-pleasing.
Yeah, I mean, don't just throw, I mean, if, you know, don't shrug it off as a Rocky film.
Right,
you
know, right.
Give it a chance.
No, I do agree, though, parts of it, like you were saying earlier, was kind of manipulation, how you were saying.
Yeah.
Did you think, like, the one part for me, like, we see this pack of girl, the
Well, yeah,
the
well,
sisters.
So, there's nine
Yeah.
kids in this kind of weird family.
Yeah.
And seven of them are girls,
right.
The daughters.
Yeah.
And, like, they're this gang of girls, you know, this, like, gaggle of, like, you know, tough, gone baby, gone, you know, you know, like, you know, townies. And,
And then for the, I mean, like, even up to...
And they're funny, but, like, well, what was the scene?
The part that I thought pushed over the edge is when they go to visit Amy
Adams' house.
They all
go in, like, this car.
It's
like a clown car thing, and they're all like, you know, and it's like the whole thing, they go to, like, kick Amy Adams' ass because she convinced Mark Wahlberg to get new trainers, essentially.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. It is funny, but you're kind of like, you know, you kind of feel bad because, like, you're laughing. You're like, oh, these people are, like, beating each other up. Like, am I watching Cops right now? And so I don't know. And you know, that's like, and that's David Russell, though. You know, you watch his movies, and his movies, I mean, like I said, they're aggravating.
Yeah.
Like, all of his movies, they're aggravating because they're so uneven.
Yeah.
You know, and you're just like, what are you really trying to say, my man? You know, and it's...
I did like, though, how he, you know, with Dickie's heroin? Is it heroin?
Crack addiction.
Like, he could have gone crazy. Like, I think if Darren Aronofsky directed this, he would have gone crazy over the top of it. And, like, with this, I liked how it's, like, you see him do it, like, twice throughout the movie. Like, the actual, you know?
Yeah.
I like how he just kind of, it's just, like, a quick, you know, thing that, like, we get it. We understand, because through Christian Bale's performance, we get the effects. We don't need to see him, you know, these, you know, like, long extended shots of him just doing crack and, like, whatever. Doing.
Oh,
like,
no,
you know?
I totally
and
agree.
So I like that moment. And I do, it actually hit me pretty hard, the moment, because I didn't know, you know, the film, the HBO special. I thought, you know, it was an HBO special on his ride. Like, I didn't know anything about the movie. So when they said it was
about
his crack.
Oh, really? You didn't know that? Oh,
no.
See. Okay.
Did you know that?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
And so, like, I didn't know that. So I was like, oh shit. Like, and then it gets crazy, like, when they actually show the special. And I like that moment a lot. Like,
yeah, I totally agree. Yeah,
when he's, you know, he goes to prison. Spoilers. But yeah. Oh, and the other part is when he the reason he owes the prison. That scene, I liked how it, you know, kind of Scorsese-esque with, like, the scene, like, you know, before he when he punches, kill,
yeah,
punches
that,
the cop.
Yeah, the scene where he gets his hand broken.
And, like, they're cutting from Mark Wahlberg in At a Nice Dinner with his family. And, like, yeah, that whole scene, I really like the way he did that.
Well, there's a lot of that, yeah, you know. And, like, there's one scene, though, in particular, which I thought was very funny, but also belonged in a completely different movie. Mm-hmm. And that was when they go to Lexington, Massachusetts to go to dinner and a movie. And this is Mark Wahlberg and Amy Adams. And Mark Wahlberg, like, tries to take Amy Adams out to this, like, nice place in, like, the, I guess, the uppity part of town it's supposed to be. Yeah. And it's just very, it's like, it's almost like David Russell just wants to, like, to stick a fuck you into, like, the movie critics. And, like, that's fine. I'm all about sticking fuck yous into, like, any, you know, whoever you want to. You know, obviously, you know, David Russell would be the filmmaker to do that. But it just feels kind of, you know, like, you know, not, like, it shouldn't have been in the final cut. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's kind of like a scene where, you know, there's this uppity couple who talks about this French film they're going to see, and then, or whatever the film was, I think it was French, yeah, and then she's talking about the subtitles, Amy Adams, and it's funny. It's definitely a funny scene, but I it doesn't really fit with the rest of the movie.
Yeah,
but then I guess there's a lot of things that don't fit with other things.
Isn't that where they get their first kiss? Is that, am I wrong?
No, I'm sure.
Is that, I think that, I don't know. Yeah, I like that moment.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it does connect, I guess, yeah, narratively, but I mean, there would have been a better way. Is, yeah, what, you know, what else?
Him falling asleep, I thought was kind of funny. But yeah, I agree.
Well, yeah, no, that's what I mean. It was funny. It was a funny, yeah, scene. You know, yeah, it was a funny, really funny scene. I laughed. Yeah,
but yeah, if you want to get more in depth, just the moment that the movie lost me was that scene where Mark Wahlberg has to kind of tell Dick he's coming back from prison. He has to kind of tell
him
that he's
not going to be a part. And he's got a new manager. He's got a, yeah, new trainer at this point. And he's got to tell Dickie that, yeah.
Yeah, the whole scene, that's where Mark Wahlberg finally, like, comes out and, like, takes a stand.
Takes kind of a stand
for the first
for his
time.
Life, yeah.
And that's where he just, you know, I cannot get his SNL impression out of my head. Like, and like,
yeah, but
yeah,
see,
and
I thought it was, I mean, yeah, I agree. I totally agree. Like, it was definitely part of his performance.
Yeah.
Well, because, and we've talked about this, I think we've talked about this before. Like, when Mark Wahlberg performs, when his voice, like, rises, like, it literally is, yeah, like, it's a tonal shift in his voice. That, like, it almost, like, shifts it from, like, serious to silly, like, yeah, almost without intention.
But
it's only recently he started doing it. Like, in The Happening, like, that was, I mean, honestly, like, one of the things about The Happening was that he did that a lot. Like, yeah, and I think it was because he was playing a nicer character, so he like, raised his voice and everything. And that's, like, that scene with the old woman who was like, man, we're not doing anything wrong, you know? And you're, yeah, like, and you're just like, what? Yeah. What did you say, yeah, young boy? Yeah. Like, and so in this scene, he's like, not you, you know? He's like, why? I just want to be with my family. Can I just not, you know, can I just be with my family? And you're like, shut up. Like, can I give you a bottle?
Yeah.
You know, and like, it just, like, it's honestly a very primal thing. Like, the reaction is like, what? Like, what little boy? Like, it's very strange. But my point is that, like, aside from that moment, really, there wasn't a lot of that. And, like,
no,
I thought Mark Wahlberg did a good job. The only other time where I liked it, but it was close, was when he's like, I'm done fighting, Charlene.
Yeah.
Like, you're just like,
see, I was just laughing so
you're
hard
just like,
the whole time.
Damn it, yeah, like, damn it, Mark, and just keep your voice low. Yeah. That's all you have to do.
And
but anyway, that's Arnold Russell. That's what I think. I think that's Arnold Russell.
Like?
I think, I mean, David Russell should be the guy to be like, listen, Mark, I hate to tell you this, but, like, you just gotta keep your voice low.
Yeah.
You sound like a child.
Yeah, that's true.
You know
that's
what
true.
I mean? But anyway, that's not the one thing about that scene. That scene just way,
oh, yeah,
too in your face.
Yeah.
It's like, let's talk about the problems of the movie right now. It's like, it's my family and my girlfriend, they're both doing the same exact thing. That's the point of the entire film. It's like, everybody's using each other. Let's all talk about the theme of the entire film right before the end.
Yeah.
Unnecessary.
But then,
unnecessary,
I mean, the last
dialogue.
Scene, I was totally disconnected from it, but I could feel a little bit, you know, the whole, you know, the
yeah,
TV,
see,
the
it's
TV.
Funny, I mean, for me, obviously, with a movie like that, you're really wondering how much you're going to care.
Yeah.
You know, and like, you know, at the end of The Wrestler, you care.
Yeah.
You know, at the end,
yeah,
of Black,
yeah,
Swan, I don't know. A lot of people care.
Yeah.
And so, with this, I was actually curious because, like I said, it was a very trying experience for me. Like,
yeah,
like, the movie was, you know, it was like the agony and the ecstasy kind of a thing. So when the final scene came, I was like, I wonder how I'm going to react to this. Like, I actually wonder how much I care about these characters, truthfully. And I don't know why, but, like, it really got me. You know, and then they're all hugging, and it's like in this one moment, moment of unification. Like, all these people don't like each other, kind of, but they love each other, but they don't like each other. Like, they can hug.
I did like that. I do recall.
Do you know what I mean? Like, in that moment of unification, like, of a family, you know, of a family that you know, confronted their differences and now has conquered them for at least a moment.
Yeah.
I'm doing a lot of hands right now. I don't know, it was just nice. You know, it was just very, and like I said, I felt earned. Yeah. You know, earned, which was important. So, but I don't know. I mean, I think Amy Adams, like I said, is the standout here. I mean, Christian Bale definitely does a lot of acting, and it's good acting. It is good acting. So, you know, I think he definitely, you know, deserves some of the credit. But I would, if it were me, the Oscar he will most certainly be receiving would probably not be going to him. But definitely for his body of work. If we're gonna play that card, he deserves more than one Oscar.
So. Yes. All right, go see The Fighter.
Yeah. Right. So check it out.
All right, now let's get into the big release of this weekend / year.
Oh shit!
3 years in the making, Tron Legacy.
28 years.
After 28 years.
Just start it up, Jordan. Why don't you just go? Go crazy.
Yeah.
Do it.
So yeah, I saw this two weeks ago now. And I mean, some background. I think we both watched Tron for the first time recently. Right?
Only 6 months ago. You know.
And I mean, I was impressed by the aesthetic of it, I guess. But not really engaged in the movie. But I could see why. The original Tron. Yes.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And I could see, you know, why it's kind of a cult hit. It was kind of the first movie to have that aesthetic and kind of anyways, and Jeff Bridges in that movie. I remember liking him from what I remember.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there was anything he did in that movie that was groundbreaking.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, an interesting movie. The special effects were obviously, you know,
yeah. And now, I mean, Tron Legacy. Like, this is the perfect movie to update. When I saw that.
Oh yeah.
I mean, now the visual effects that were kind of, hinted about and hinted just be like
real,
and just be insane in this movie. And I mean, even from the teasers.
I mean, and since you can do all that, you can spend a lot of time on story development.
Exactly. I mean, Disney literally had an unlimited amount of resources.
Well, I mean, Disney literally runs the world.
Yeah.
They run the world.
I mean, this is their huge temple of the year, I would say. Of the last few years. I mean, has there been, I guess.
Well, no, I mean, Disney, I mean, you know, Disney. Tangled, you know, like they have that.
This movie, I mean, we didn't see stuff for Tangled 3 years ago. You know, I mean, they've been hyping this movie for a long time.
Right, but I'm just saying they spent a movie on it. I mean, they spent $250 million on Tangled. You know, sure, like, they spent a lot of money on everything. But yeah, no, I mean, this movie, Comic-Con 3 years in a row, a big fan base. I mean, I think because we work in the internets, you know, we feel a bigger closeness, you know, and a bigger importance, I guess.
And then, you know, I mean, I was pretty excited in the last month and a half or so, like, literally Disney would release something new. And this only affects us, really, because we report on every day. They would literally release a new poster, a new trailer, and something every single 3 or 4 days, and it kind of got grinded.
A reported altogether $300 million between P&A and production budget. Yeah. Those are Avatar numbers.
Yeah, and so coming to this movie, let's set the expectations. I was expecting something visually amazing,
stimulating,
you know, hopefully interesting characters,
right?
You know, and I mean, we can talk about this later, but the people I want to almost punch in the face that say, "Oh my God, you were expecting something more than visuals in Tron? You're retarded!" Like that is something.
What I'll say about that. You know, what I'll say about that is that if, like, we can't start doing that. We can't start saying, "Oh, you weren't expecting more than, like, oh, you were expecting more than just visuals and Tron." It's kind of like, well,
this isn't a light show. I wasn't going to see a light
fucking movie. Like, if I was gonna, like, I could play a video game anytime I wanted to. Like, couldn't I? Like, couldn't I buy a video game for $50? I could play Halo. I could play Halo every single day.
Yeah.
And have, a pretty standard story with amazing visuals and really good production design ideas.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm gonna go to a movie because, I don't know, there are characters in it.
and there's music, and there's other things. Like, it's actual full artistic experience. So maybe, like, I'm about to defend Tron Legacy, so I'm not gonna get really on this whole thing. But there was a review, I forget who wrote it, but it was kind of saying, you know, it was saying, like, if this is good enough, who wrote that review? It was like, David Chen retweeted it.
Scott Mendelson.
Right, that was what it was. If, you know, if we're going to let, you know, if Tron Legacy is good enough entertainment, then, you know, there's no, you know, we should be angry at but ourselves.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if we're not willing to ask for anything more than this, then, you know, and I disagree, right? But that sentiment, I do not disagree with.
All right, yeah. Right? So, yeah. Okay, so my thoughts on Tron Legacy. So, quick walk through.
Walk me through it.
Opening.
Hit me.
I love the Disney logo.
Oh God!
And then there's like an opening 20 minutes where it almost feels like it's a Dark Knight. Like, I'm not kidding. Like the scene where you know, there's even, I mean, all the city photography feels like it's something straight out of the Dark Knight. Like every single piece.
But you didn't. Okay, but let me just say this. You didn't. I love those cityscapes, how it becomes, like, it builds up and becomes the cityscape, like the Tron world. You know, with Jeff Bridges, like, the grid.
Oh, yeah, I like that scene.
And then the streamlines raise up.
I did like that, yeah. but there's shots that, and then we get in and we meet, you know, 1982 Sam Flynn, then it flashes to present day. And then there's, like, a shot on his motorcycle, which is cool. It was cool to look at, but it literally felt like the way the camera was moving with the visuals, and that it was riding right behind his motorcycle, and like the IMAX, it just felt exactly the same. And not to say, it was cool to look at, but it just I did not think about Dark Knight. And then we get this whole, you know, Encom. He goes to Encom, which is his empire that he is not really a part of, but he likes to play pranks with them every year. He owns, you know, what?
He owns 51%, but he doesn't run the company.
And then it leads up, you know, he goes to hijacked this OS that they are.
Let me just quickly say that was the one little thing I did have kind of a problem with, like, in terms of feeling sympathy for this character. Like, he owns Encom, so, like, he could go in at any point and kind of, you know, run it. Yeah. Literally that's Bruce Wayne in Batman Begins, this is a difference here because you sympathize for Bruce Wayne, but you do not really sympathize for Sam Flynn. One fault for sure. I will definitely concede.
And what did you think about? It felt like a really cheap way to tell the backstory. But what did you think about all of a sudden? Just these TVs pop out of nowhere, like, and
talk. I didn't think it was too cheap.
But it, like,
I mean,
doesn't, like,
Children of Men did it. You know, because
you were watching. What do you mean? Right. That was in the story, though. This was completely separate. It was literally like a short film. Like, those TVs had nothing to do with anything. It's like, let's step out of the movie for a second. Let's look at this. It's kind of cool. We're going to show these TVs that go on every time, then let's go back in the movie.
Yeah, I agree.
I just felt weird. We need to catch up all, literally, the thousands upon thousands of people that have not seen The Real Tron, because that is almost, I feel like there's a lot of people.
I got nothing to defend.
And so, okay.
Actually, let me just quickly say also another little pet peeve I have with pretty much, like, movies like this and also, like, Surrogates.
Yeah.
Is, like, like, newspaper titles.
Oh,
where,
yeah.
Like, where are there, like, where are their newspaper titles that says things like, is Kevin Flynn losing his mind?
Yeah.
Like, I know that a lot of people read the New York Post, okay? Yeah. And, you know, if you read that, like, for shame. Like, if you, I'm not going to get all liberal. But anyway, the point is, only in rags are there, like, ridiculously exaggerated, like, titles like, is Kevin Flynn, like, losing his mind, or something like that? Like, has Flynn officially lost it?
Yeah.
Like, and so stuff like that always makes me angry, because it's like, just feel free to just, like, you know, I don't know, like, don't, like, have a normal news title and then have the narration explain it. Like, the news title is like, is Flynn losing his mind? And then, like, the woman was like, people think that Flynn has finally lost it. And they're just like, well, I can see it.
Yeah.
Like, but anyway.
And we get a little, I mean, should we go, not, let's not spoil, but we get a little cameo. To hint at what's going to happen in Tron 3, I suppose.
I guess it's a little, it's a who,
whatever his name is, David Wagner's the actor,
yeah.
who his son is.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yep.
and then
whatever. I didn't hate that scene in the boardroom where they're talking about sourcing and open source.
As soon
and all
as
that
they
stuff.
Go, like they talk about like piracy and stuff, I was like, oh my god, this is awesome. They're gonna, you know, this whole movie might be about like that whole thing. Like that might be really interesting. And then none of it is about it. So I was like,
It would be kind of cool. Like, yeah, I agree. Like, it would be kind of cool if we found out that like NCOM was using Clue as like their guy inside.
Yeah, like yeah.
You know, and there was this whole corporate thing going on, kind of like the first one.
Oh, really?
Like you know, like there was this whole corporate like, thing where to like prevent.
But well, like well, quickly, my biggest problem in the movie is that world we get that we'll talk about later, which I really initially liked, that whole world we get into the grid. Has
nothing to do with the outside
real
world.
Life.
Yeah.
And when they try to relate it, it just comes off kind of flimsy. Like,
well, yeah, and see that was the and this is funny because that was. I'll say this: I enjoy Tron Legacy far more than I enjoy Tron.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I can say.
But
that.
I can say also that the best part about Tron was that there was like such a stark connection between the outer world and the inner world, because like in the outer it was the same thing. It was literally like we're inside a computer, but the stakes are still here because if we lose here, we lose out there.
Yeah.
Right, but in this movie it was like there were stakes kind of, but there was this whole thing where it's like, well, we need to get out, but maybe he can't get out, and if I had never come in, none of this would have happened anyway. You know, and so like the only real stakes is Kevin Flynn going to get out?
Yeah.
But, like, who cares, kind of? Because he seems to be having a pretty good time. Like, so, like, there's really not, like, a lot about the movie. I mean, they try to introduce these ISOs or something.
Yeah, they're gonna...
Which are these, like, they felt like the Clone
the minion,
Wars people.
Are they already Clone Wars, yeah.
You know, but, like, they're not, though. They're supposed to be, like, intelligent humans. Like,
yeah.
That's the whole thing. But, like, Olivia Wilde, spoilers, is the last one.
Yeah.
And so, but she's, like, she's an idiot.
Yeah.
But she's not an idiot because she mentions how she's read
all these books that...
But she, like, plays it like she's an idiot.
Yeah.
And so it's very strange. It's like, so you've read all these books, but you don't know clearly what any of them mean because, like, you don't know anything. So what is going on? It's like, I'm, like, talking myself out of liking it right now. But, like, but no, I mean,
no,
okay.
No, but, okay, so we get into,
So we get into the grid.
Well, for before that, like, the thing I was going to say that looks directly like The Dark Knight is the shot where he is on top of a building, and the dumbass security guard that gets paid probably, like, less, jumps out on a beam with him and tries to talk him down. Like, just don't. Like, why would you do that? Like, that is so
dumb. That was so strange.
And then I laughed my ass off when he jumped. Literally, he jumps off the building, and there's, like, this shot where, like, Garrett Hedlund's trying to be, like, a badass, like, where he's just free-falling.
Well,
and,
you
like,
know what that's referencing.
Give it to me. What?
Well, like the way he jumps off the building, you know, like the way because people haven't seen the movie.
Because
he jumps away. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's the scene. He jumps off the building in a back arc.
Yeah.
Right.
No.
Like,
I'm talking
with the parachute.
Right.
You're talking about like
no,
at the
but
top
I'm
of the
talking.
Skyscraper.
There's just a single shot where it's just him, like the camera's following him falling down, and it just looked really silly to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I know what you mean.
But
that
let me just say,
okay,
I didn't know about. I'm not gonna act super smart, but I don't know what review it was. I think it might have been. I don't even know. It might have been the New York. No, the New Yorker. No, I don't think New York had a Tron review. It might have been the Times. Oh yeah, it was the Times. I think it was the Times. They reference how when he jumps off the building, that is a direct reference to the Triumph of the Will.
Oh.
And because remember that whole diving sequence where they're all jumping off in slow motion?
Yeah.
And I guess, like, the idea is, I guess maybe that's like supposed to be, like, a technical revolution thing.
Okay.
Like, oh, we're changing things.
I mean, that would be
changing things. She was changing things. Like,
if,
blah, blah, blah.
If they meant that would be amazing.
Unearned. I'll say that. Unearned.
And before we get into the grid, another really good point. I think it was Totally Ratchet I was listening to this. Sam's character, they present him as a badass from the very beginning of the movie, so there's no build-up to him. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he doesn't come off. Not that he should have been a full-on nerd that couldn't do anything in the beginning, but like he's presented as this like like just really slick badass right from the beginning. So there's no build up to when he can when he actually does stuff in the grid. Do you understand? Like,
oh,
do,
totally.
Do you believe me? Like,
yeah,
I mean,
no,
do you agree
no.
with me?
Well, no, like, look, I'm not like, look, I totally agree.
We didn't talk about
no, no,
that
no,
yet.
I know,
so,
I totally agree. Yeah. And I think honestly, Garrett Hedlund, I think he's got a bright, bright future ahead of him.
Yeah,
but
I didn't.
Really,
I didn't,
he's
yeah.
not given a lot to work with, and I do agree, he's not given a lot to work with. He's definitely the weakest character.
Yeah.
But
so we get to the grid.
So we're in the grid.
And initially, real quick, the 3D. I actually really. A lot of people were kind of hating on the 3D.
Really?
I was talking. Yeah, I was surprised.
I dug it.
I thought it was great.
Yeah, I dug it. I dug the hell out of it.
But go ahead. You go.
Okay, so you're saying, and honestly, this really didn't affect me, but you're saying you're watching the first 20 minutes, a lot of it reminded you of The Dark Knight. Now, halfway through, once they get into the grid, I was like, haven't I seen this entire movie before? And I was thinking about it, and I was like, and then it just hit me, and I realized that I was watching Star Wars. Like, I was literally watching a remake of Star Wars. And, you know, I don't mean this necessarily in a bad way, but, I mean, if you think about it, it really is a lot like Star Wars. You have Obi-Wan, Jeff Bridges, Kevin Flynn, who's become this kind of Zen-like master of the stuff, and he's got these powers that he really talks about, but he only kind of has up until the end. You don't really know about them. The Force.
Yeah.
Does the Force really work? All this stuff.
They go to these weird clubs.
They go to these weird clubs. I don't like them.
But there was you could tell they were the one reference where like he hits the towards the end where they have to get on a ship and he hits the guy and doesn't that happen in Star Wars like a droid?
Well,
no.
How about no? There's a such a direct reference when they throw him the thing that turns into the bike and he goes like this.
Oh yeah.
And then the guy's like, "That's not
for,
how."
For our podcast listeners, Dan's making
emotions. Sorry, he's holding it like a lightsaber,
literally,
expecting the thing to come out. And someone goes, "That's not how that works."
Yeah.
And it's like, "Oh, because in Snow, you know." But anyway, so Jeff Bridges, Obi-Wan, Olivia Wilde, Last of Her Kind, Carrie Fisher, Last of Her Kind, Garrett Hedlund. Son who doesn't know what kind of powers lay ahead of him. Luke Skywalker, son that doesn't know what powers lay ahead of him, kind of a thing. And then they have to get somewhere, and if they get there before the other people get there, then things will be all right. But if not, the whole world will be destroyed.
And pretty much a TIE fighter scene at the end
of
the movie.
Oh, and it's just like a shot for shot. I was waiting for someone to be like, Red 2 standing by, Red 4 standing by. I was like waiting for that to happen. And then, like, Lando comes in. He's like, ba-da-ba-ba-da-da-da-da. And there wasn't any Chewbacca, though, so we'll say that.
Yes.
Or Han Solo. But I guess, like, I guess, Han Solo was played by Jeff Bridges because he played, like, three roles in this movie.
Yeah.
But anyway, that direct plotting aside, I really found myself enjoying myself. Now, look, there's a lot of reasons I might have enjoyed it more than you. I was with my 13-year-old brother. I took him to see it, and he was fucking loving it. He was loving the IMAX. He was loving the 3D. He was loving the Daft Punk score. Obviously, because that's far and away the best part of this movie. Far and away the best part of this movie.
Worth it. I would even say for me, even
worth
as much
it,
I hate it,
worth it.
And for the visuals, worth it. Even
worth
though
it.
I would say
totally,
that they totally.
But look,
going.
I enjoyed it. Like, I enjoyed the movie. I ate it up. I really did. I said that, and I do stand by that. I ate the movie up. I would see it again if someone invited me. Like to see it. I would be like, definitely go see it and all that. I thought Olivia Wilde did a lot of saving. You know, I think she was pretty funny. She's obviously very attractive, very pretty to look at. You know, that blonde girl, I believe her name is Bo Garrett.
Yeah.
She's very, very, very pretty as well. And, you know, had a nice couple funny lines or whatever they were. Michael Sheen, people are split about him.
Yeah.
I liked him. I thought he spiced things up.
Yeah, I mean, he was just ridiculous.
I thought he spiced things up, you know. And so, there's that. My biggest problem, I mean, look, it's no Avatar. You know, I loved I really loved Avatar, and I mean Avatar. You know, Pocahontas. It may be Fern Gully. It may be Dances with Wolves. It may be, but it is a story and it has real characters, and you do feel for those characters.
Yeah.
You know, at the end when Naitiri is holding Sam Worthington and he's about to die, like I felt for that. I get it in that moment, and I never got there with this movie. I'll say that I never got there with this movie. You know, and that's why, like, you know, I criticize these people who are like, "Oh, you weren't expecting more than technical things with Tron," and then I'm the guy saying, like, "Oh, you know, I really like the story, but I like the technical things with Tron." So there's that. I'm gonna say that I thought that the Jeff Bridges dude thing, Like, I get it. Like, I get that I love Jeff Bridges' bandwagon right now. Like, he's a great actor, very talented guy. He's been doing it for 40 years. Hopefully he does it for another 40. What the fuck was that? Correct me if I'm wrong, because maybe I am. I don't really remember Tron that much.
Truthfully. I was just going to ask you if that happens in Tron.
He's not like that in the first Tron. And I guess the whole point is he's been zenning it up for like 30 years. And like he's doing
thousands of cycles.
What was the thing? Like, you're messing up my zen thing, man. All these lines about being the zen. It's like, what are you... I don't know. It was very strange. And the thing is, there's a lot of conveniences that are just way the writing is just is poor, right? Because so the reason that Jeff Bridges hasn't left, Kevin Flynn hasn't left, is because Clue took over, and it's too dangerous for him to go back to the main to the grid. Like he's living off grid. He's living off grid. And it's too dangerous for him to go back to the grid because if the portal's open for 8 hours, and if Clue got out, and then the world and the Clue and things would be bad.
Religion would change.
Right, and religion would change. No, but so he's scared to do that. Right, that's his reasoning. And then he's got this ISO, Cora, who's Olivia Wilde, and like he's afraid for her life. And so he just does nothing. And then his son comes, and like in the space of 9 minutes, he's like, you know what? Let's go. And he just kind of, you're kind of like, well, why now?
Yeah.
Presumably, I guess the idea is that portal hasn't been open in 28 years because, no one's been zapped into the Tron world or something like that. But he's got this key that would allow things
to That doesn't open. Want to get stolen, but they never really.
Then it does get stolen, but it.
But they don't do anything.
Pretty strange. This is by far the laziest piece of writing of the entire year. I'm going to say that outright. And I'm going to say, I did enjoy the movie.
The whole screenplay or this part you're going to say?
No, this one part was the laziest piece of writing I've seen. And it was the laziest piece of writing I've seen all year. It's literally a scene. I don't even know how this got away. And how people aren't, pointing this out is just the stupidest thing ever. They get in this fight, and then Jeff Bridges and, Kevin and Sam Flynn get in this fight. Cora's been kidnapped.
Right.
And they fall onto a thing. And the thing is moving. And Kevin Flynn stands up and he looks and he goes, "This'll take us there." And you realize that what he means is that this thing they've fallen on.
Cora's with him at that time, right?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, sure. Yeah, whatever.
They had that whole
sunset
thing.
I'm sorry. Okay, so Cora's with them. So they all fall onto this thing and he looks up and he goes, "This will take us there." And this being this, light thing, this little traveling elevator. Yeah, a monorail. A monorail taking them to the one place across the entire grid where they need to go, very conveniently, this is the one thing that'll take us.
Surprisingly slow and ultra boring. For my part.
Right, and really slow. This is where the writing is lazy. They're going slow. Time is it not of the essence? They keep saying, if Clue beats us there, and he gets out of Earth, and he is the master, and at this point he has the master key, am I wrong?
Yeah.
So Clue has to do is go faster than this really slow-moving monorail, and then the movie's over, right? But for some reason, Clue...
Is waiting for them?
Oh, wait, no, okay, well, this is a saving grace, this makes me feel better about liking it, at least, is that Clue has to, interrogate Michael Sheen. You remember Clue, gets the key from Michael Sheen.
But doesn't he, in this world, isn't he kind of, the master? Doesn't he know, that's the monorail that can get it, that gets us there? Wouldn't you have guys there, at least patrolling, or, knowing, hey, if you see a ship going by with these three guys, just let me know, okay? That was the other thing that pissed me off, one point that I want to bring up. I think there's a two-minute scene, less than 2 minutes, where, it's raining, and, there's this huge world, and people are walking around, and Jem comes up, and it's you're oh, I want to see a lot more of that, that looks really cool, and, they don't show any of it. I was so pissed off.
I do agree.
And instead, they put him on a fucking monorail for 20 minutes, and, there's no momentum.
I just didn't understand that's the stuff that is written these days, where, you think, 3 years.
Yeah.
Like, but, I mean, more than 3 years. I mean, yeah. You know, 5 years. I mean, however long. And you just think, like, how did that get into the final draft? Like, and we were talking about this with, like, you know, we've been talking about this with, like, all these screenplays today. Like, you know, How Do You Know? And The Tourist. Like, how do these things, like, how does it become this boat chase that's, like, really, really slow in The Tourist? Like, how does the monorail, whatever it was, that's really, really slow, make it into the end, you know, the final cut of Tron, Legacy?
I mean, for me, like, the two, we didn't even talk about these, but the two, which I was totally into and I really enjoyed, the two first grid battles, which he gets over with really quickly, like the disc battle and then the really cool 5-on-5 light cycle battle. And then for me, personally, after that moment when Korra saves him, the whole movie just hits a brick wall, literally. And, like, I was, you know, done with it.
You know the count.
And, like,
yeah.
And from then on, it never feels like there's, like, it just feels like they're sitting still. And, like, things are happening around him, kind of. You don't see it. And like
you assume that they,
like,
know.
And, like, it just never felt like this, like, I mean, any type of, like, star, like, with Star Wars, there, like, you see them, like, travel, like, at least it's interesting, like, they're going to places, at least. Like, here it just felt like they're just kind of sitting down and then going, like, and then going to another place, and then, like, but you never see any of it. Not that I want to see, like, long, like, really long shots of them just on a ship, but, like, at least, you know. Like, I just felt there was no sense of actual adventure in this movie.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it just, like, and look, I did enjoy, like, the production design was really, really great. Sure. Like I said, I love the score. The action scenes, I thought, were very, very solid. You know, I will say the climactic action scene was a little anticlimactic. I'll say that.
I agree.
But one thing I will say, you know, I feel like I am kind of inching towards kind of your sentiments a little bit in this conversation. But, like, whatever, okay. So, but anyway, what I was gonna say is that this is a good example of what we've kind of been talking about, where we seem to be living in this kind of very serious, cynical world where. You know, where is the adventure in this movie? Like, where is the fun in this computer world that, like, I mean, was apparently apparent in Tron. Like, I did watch some of it recently, and, like, they're marveling at things. There's, like, a couple things they find out. Like, they drink this water, and it's, like, they're laughing and stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, it's kind of cool, and it's, like, this really cool color and all this. And, you know, and they're, like, enjoying themselves for a moment, at least. But in this movie, it's so serious. You know, it's so, so serious. It's like, you know, like, if we don't get to this thing, the world's going to end. And, I mean, in Star Wars, it's the same thing, but they enjoy themselves. You know, you have the little quips with Han Solo and Leia, and, you know, there's these quippy-quip things that are going on, and, like, there's cute banter, and, you know, the scene in the beginning with Han and the guy who shoots, whatever his name is, you know, like, there are these moments, and, I mean, and this is why, like, you know, I mean, when we talk about Crystal Skull, you know, people hate in that movie. But, like, I'll defend that movie because that movie is fun. Like, there's a sense of adventure.
I agree.
You know, like, it's not going to be easy. You know, not as easy as it used to be. Ha, ha, ha. Like, that's funny. You're older. Like, this is really funny because, like, we're aware of what's happening and we're making fun of it. Like, right. we're making lemonade out of lemons kind of a thing. And I just don't – you don't see that in these movies. Like, it's so fucking serious. You know, it really is so serious. Like, where is the joy of these worlds?
Yeah.
And, like, that's why you gotta, like, I get at least appreciate a Michael Sheen, because Michael Sheen seemed to be enjoying it. You're like, well, why can't these other people enjoy it? Like, this is a computer world. You're living in a computer. Like, you're living in a computer. Like, how awesome is that? No, is that not awesome? Like, I don't know.
No, I agree.
So that's another thing, and it just kind of it's compounded. Like, even the fucking Transformers movies are too serious. You're just like, come on, like, take it easy.
I mean, but I have more fun with Transformers than this.
Oh, I disagree. The first one?
Oh yeah.
I mean, I'd put them right next to each other.
What?
Yeah, I think so.
At least that dude in Transformers, I was like, oh, okay.
I'll say this.
He did what he was going for, and I liked it.
The thing that Transformers, okay, the thing that would put Transformers over the top is that last 30 minutes of Transformers.
You like.
Which I love.
Yeah.
Right, that would put, but just because that last 30 minutes is a lot better than this last 30 minutes.
Oh, totally.
That would put it over the top. Yeah, okay. So
I'm not going to get a Transformers defender. I'm not going to be a Transformers defender, but
I just got to start drinking.
Even Shia LaBeouf was a fun person.
Oh, in the first one.
Yeah, in the first one. Oh, no. We are not talking about, I hate Revenge of the Fallen. That is,
we're not talking about that.
At least in the first one, there was some sense of fun.
Yeah.
And but anyways, yeah, Tron. I honestly, I would honestly recommend just getting the score. I mean, and it's a weird thing because, like, you're never, I can't say rent it because it's never going to be the same experience in IMAX 3D. Like, you're never going to get that. True. But, like, I guess pay for it and be really disappointed. And, like, at the end, I don't know, like, what to say. Like, it's a weird movie.
No, I mean, I guess we deserve better than this.
Yeah.
I mean, I do agree with that.
Fuck.
All right.
Hell yes. All right. Well, that's our review. Is there anything else we want to talk about with Tron?
I really thought I could find a way to.
I mean, do you want to get the spoiler? I
really thought I could like find a way to defend this, but like, maybe I just wasn't trying today. I don't even know what happened. I'm beaten. I feel like less of a man.
Do you want to get into the last 5 minutes, which I hate?
No, I'm
you're done.
I'm spent because right. I just feel like I've lost it.
Yeah,
I've lost my mojo.
Definitely did.
Damn it.
Well. I mean, it's kind of, I think, spoilers, I think Daft Punk died in this movie. That was kind of sad. The explosion of the club.
Oh, yeah.
So, they won't be in the sequel, I guess. I was really
Tron
sad.
Legacies.
Yeah. Two Tron, Two Legacy.
Two Tron, Two
Legacy. Well, that's a good spoiler to end on. No. Yeah, no, like we said, I guess you'll get some enjoyment out of it if you go with your 13-year-old brother. if you go by yourself and, like, the nitpick.
See it with your 13-year-old brother and then don't reflect on it.
There you go. There you go. That wraps it up. All right.
Now I'm just sad.
All right. Well, next week, are we... True Grit. We'll be back for True Grit.
Yeah, True Grit. We got a couple others.
Depending on the holidays.
We got Rabbit Hole.
And something else. King's Speech, you'll see.
Yeah, maybe King's we'll
Speech. Oh, we didn't talk about King's this. There's Speech. Definitely something else.
But, oh, you mentioned King's Speech, but we can do like a little
something.
A little remix. Ricka.
Ricka. All right. Well, thank you. Oh, are we seeing... No, never mind. There's something else that we were going to review. I can't think of
it. Yeah, well, you'll see it next
time. Do you want to do a little No Strings Attached mention? We saw a rough cut. Talk about that experience.
No.
All right. Well, we saw Ivan... I'll do a little... We saw Ivan Reitman's No Strings Attached, a really long cut. It's the can
cut. The director's
cut. No, just kidding.
The cut for can.
And mildly enjoyable.
Solid first half, rough second half.
Yep.
That's pretty much...
So, there you go. That's an exclusive film stage report right there. No one else has that. So, except the 30 other people, or the 50 other people we saw it with. Yeah. But anyways. But thank you for listening. If you love Tron and want to tell us how wrong we are, please email us, editors@thefilmstage. You can follow me at twitter.com/thefilmstage.
And you can follow me at twitter.com/DJMECCA.
Yep. All right. Thank you. Have a good night.